Are we on? All right, then we can start with roll call.
Brendan O'Meara. John Foley.
Here.
Brian Houston.
Here.
Doug Brennheiser is excused. Marianne Liebel.
Here.
Ken Geddes.
Here.
Neil White.
Here.
All right. Has everyone received and reviewed the agenda from the last meeting, or for this meeting?
Yes.
Yes.
And are there any additions or anything we want to add to the agenda? Seeing none, could I ask someone to move to approve the agenda? All right, can I get a second?
I will second.
Awesome. Well, could we get a vote to see who approves if we approve the agenda?
Aye.
On favor, say
aye.
All right, thank you. Then we'll go on to approving the minutes. Has everybody received and reviewed the minutes from the April 17th meeting?
Yes.
Yes.
And are there any corrections that need to be made to the minutes?
No.
All right. Well, then can I get a motion to approve the minutes as distributed?
Motion.
All right.
Second.
All right. Then everyone in favor of approving the minutes as distributed, please say aye.
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 All right. Thank you very much. All right. Now we'll move on to the public comment portion of the meeting. We've got three visitors or a couple visitors here. Would you like to address the board? All right, Ron.
Good afternoon. I'm representing a neighborhood association here in Salem, SIMCA, at Southeast Mill Creek Association. It encompasses the airport, southeast over by Lancaster, and to the other side from Home Depot. That is this area, as well as mobile home parks here. As a request and voted by the membership, I'm here to ask the military if after closing hours in the evening, the aircraft that are coming in with helicopters not break off the approach on 3-1 and come in over the top of Turner Road and the mobile home park, because the people say the reverberation from the props on the helicopters really shake. And it really bothers the old folks there. Can they bring the helicopters down 3-1 and then break off in front of the west of the building and inland rather than come in over the mobile home park?
When we're on final coming on 3-1, we don't break off, we down Turner Road. We actually wait until we're probably a Beam Garmin, a golf taxiway, and then request the tower that we sidestep to Bravo taxiway. We do not fly over Turner Road.
Well,
the only time we fly over Turner Road,
that
the only time we fly over Turner Road is when we are coming in on our Santa Am arrival down Highway 22, and then we have to stay. We start at 1,500 feet, come down to 800 feet, and until we get to I-5, and then we have to turn to land in the landing direction. So we either have to turn left or right to go over Turner Road and then over the airport proper to land on the Bravo taxiway. But that is the only time we actually fly over Turner Road, is when we're coming from the east to the west.
The indication that I got from the folks was that it was after hours and could have been from some other base where they came in. Now, I'm here to represent, and I'm going to take your information back and present it. I do know about the Santa Am arrival and departure, and I've seen that executed many times. So I thank you very much for that info.
Yep. But no, we don't fly off Turner. We fly, we're specifically asked to sidestep to the Bravo taxiway, which is it's west of Turner Road.
Now, one of the items that was brought up was the fact that some of the threesomes and twosomes have been coming over to the city of Salem, probably from Fort Lewis, to where over the South Salem neighborhoods.
I have no control of those.
That's the ones that I think they're concerned about, is the after-hour ones coming in from another military base.
Yeah, we have no control of that at all.
Okay.
No, that's regular active duty Army transiting from Fort Lewis probably down to Fort Irwin, California, and vice versa. And this is a good fuel stop, as you know.
Okay.
There was one here today, but we have... That's a regular Army, active duty Army. We have no control over them.
So there's nothing really we can do with
nothing
the transition?
Nothing that I can do.
Can you communicate with them to
share the concerns?
Sure. I mean, well, I mean, my, the avenue to do that would be up through the DAR, the Department of Aviation Representative that's up by Seattle Center. And we would just strictly just make a comment. And then that individual would then potentially take it to Fort Lewis to just put it out to the Combat Aviation Brigade that's up there.
Would it help if we were to contact Fort Lewis and asking for an advisory for a particular?
I would say no. Okay. I mean, that's a very large installation with, a Combat Aviation Brigade is several, I mean, I've got an aviation company over there. That's two echelons higher. So there's several battalions which have several companies in them, and that's got one brigade up there. It's several battalions of several companies, huge.
Okay.
So, and there's also the Special Operations Aviation Regiment that's up there as well, plus the National Guard and Reserve that are up there as well. So there's just that's a lot. It's a very large aviation element up there. To get one message from CIVCA up there is, I really doubt having any impact.
Okay, thank you.
But I will I will bring the concerns just for our local noise abatement and flying neighborly policies. I will bring that to my group.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
All right, do we have any other questions on that topic or anything for Ron? All right. Did you have anything you would like to say to the committee?
No, my name is Jessica Murdoch. I'm affiliated with the aviation community through Historical Aviation, B-17 Alliance. I also work with my business partner, Brian Heim, locally with other aviation groups, but I'm simply here to observe and hopefully help out by just raising awareness and hearing about what you guys are working on. And
all right, well, thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? Seeing none, I think we can move on to tower reports, and the first one we have is the tower chief report.
Yeah, Rob Broyhill, air traffic manager here. So I tried to count, I found a glitch in our system in May. So I just went back and did this last third quarter and made sure it was correct. And so I'll need to go back and look at the first and second quarter of the fiscal year. But I think we're pretty solid right now with April, May, June. Basically what it was doing, the program itself was just, if you go in and enter save, and somewhere throughout the days, it basically erased information. So at the end of the month of report, I noticed last month that for 2 months in a row that we were down quite a bit of operations. And I started investigating, and that's where I found it. So for right now, the reports I've sent you out, John Darcy, is that we're kind of just on hold right now. But I think I got this quarter figured out, and I'll move backwards, and then I'll get you that correct information. I think that at the end of the day, it's specifically days in the program that's doing it. So I basically deleted it, and I got a new software, and we're starting kind of fresh with that. So
how far back is it going to go, Rob? What's your fiscal year?
Say October.
Fiscal year? October.
Yeah, so I know you go off January, and that's what I send you, but I'm going to go back to my fiscal year in October, so and I'll work my way back. But so for third quarter, we ended up with just over 10,000 operations. That's about a 1,500 difference in operations for those 3 months from last year. So I'm a little apprehensive about that piece, and that's kind of a big drop in operations. Considering last year in June, I think we had construction, and we still did more operations. So it's something I'm watching pretty closely. I'll get a handle on it. Busiest day was 370 ops, which is a big day for us. This quarter, so once again, we got a busiest day. We had about 5 years, and we got less operations. So, anyways, it's one of those things that, fortunately, we take a hard copy every day, so I have the actual count I can go back and use to make sure we're in good shape. MORS, or mandatory occurrence reporting, we had 4 in-flight malfunctions and basically 3 rough engines and a gear issue. Last quarter, we had 1 pilot deviation and land without a clearance, and we had an accident yesterday. It was in our airspace, but we did talk to them, so you probably read that. I don't know if you read that, but we had an RV coming from Corvallis that put it down. They said, originally, I got a phone call last night, said Jordan and Hal Prairie. And I live out that area, so I don't know where Jordan's at. So, but I'm assuming it's Larden in Hal Prairie, which puts it based, if you know where Kaiser is stationed, just east of that towards Silverton in a field out there. So assuming that we started having problems, he ended up in our airspace. He was never in our airspace until he started having this challenge. And from the reports I got, basically he had flames at his feet and he shut everything down. So even if he got into our airspace, he didn't have any radio talk to us. But the aircraft was an RB-14 and it was destroyed, but he walked away from it. So good stuff. But he said he was just down in Corvallis doing emergency procedures for engine outs. So
fresh.
Very well there, this gentleman, so it worked out for him. So, so we're a little short starting May again, so we had a gentleman, he transferred out to North Carolina. We ended up picking up a controller that works at, worked at Aspen, Eugene, Hillsboro. So he was pretty quick checkout. He started June 3rd, and he's all his paperwork, he's certified except for the FAA's over the shoulder, which happens July 25th, so he's going to be a good addition to our tower, so pretty happy to have him aboard, since it's kind of hard right now to find folks that are qualified. So the LANCE program, it's a low altitude authorization and notification capability. It's was implemented here in July, so it's based on drones. In the past, the commercial folks would have to have an agreement with the facility to fly, and they'd call before. The hobbyists didn't have to have agreement, they still called before, so we're fielding, you know, 10 to 15 calls of this drone stuff. And what this LANCE program does, it's an electronic version. There's several companies out there that push the software. We have what's called a USAS map. It's basically grids of the area. And what if they've in those grids is altitudes they can fly in without having authorization. So as ours works, as we go out from the airport, it's zero and it goes out to 400 feet. So with the system, they can actually go in there and request that flight and get authorization. If it's in a grid that's already authorized at altitude, they can just go about their business. If they have an operation, especially their commercial folks, and they want to fly, it was, for example, I got one from the city. It's doing some survey of the waterways here. They want to fly 50 feet up and down 25th. They go in there and make this request. It's a zero grid, so no flying of drones can be right around the immediate area here. But they go in the request and put in their notes what they're doing. In this case, they have a couple extra visual observers. They're only flying 50 feet. And so that's, I'll go in there electronically and approve that or decline that. And in this case, I approved this. It was pretty well written. I understood what he's wanting to do, and it wasn't going to affect the safety of flight. But anyways, this LANCE program is going to be a really, I think it's been in the works for a couple of years, and it was tested elsewhere, but we finally got it here in our area, and it seems to be working pretty good. So I haven't had any drone issues with aircraft in quite a while. So I think that the drone, USAS drone programs, getting healthier, people are getting, you know, more educated and using the system better. So I'm pretty happy to see the LANCE online. Any questions with that?
You said that was around the 25th Street area?
Yeah, so basically,
it's right here.
Yeah, so all this vegetation, this ditch, you know, out here you see out there, instead of getting there and survey inspected from inside it, they're going to fly a drone over the top of it. And what they're looking for, I don't know. I'm sure it's drainage and those type of things. But as far as the drone requests, I get everything from thermal imaging to buildings that are leaking to construction sites to real estate. I mean, it's pretty endless right now. It's a daily, literally I could have somebody answering the phone for drone stuff right now. So this program right now basically relieves us of those phone calls. And a lot of times I just have my folks, they call, I said, you know, just let me get their number and I'll call them because I can educate in 15, 20 minutes. But they really don't have the time to be doing that when they're clients, if you will. So it's been kind of a distraction, and this process right here is actually going to fix a lot of distraction work. So.
Is that something you can, like, basically turn around and say, hey, use the software, we don't want, you know, necessarily want to take.
So I'm careful about what to do because there's private companies that you use.
Okay.
So there's like 10 of them on board right now that FAA has approved. But I'll tell them where they can go and they can choose what app they, you know, I wish I would have designed an app actually. I would tell them my app, but, but anyways, basically I'll just educate the individuals. And a lot of law enforcement right now, Kaiser Police Department, we've been working with those folks for quite a while now. Now I can, if some other law enforcement emergency services calls in, I say, hey, contact Scott Kinfold. He's been through this process. He'll walk you through it. But yeah, for the most part, it's just education. And one of the hardest parts about the education, it was changing all the time. So, you know, once, I think at one time we had on the city website, Call the Tower, you know, and it changed so many times that, you know, just the ambiguity of it was really tough to keep up with. But the commercial piece of this drone stuff has just exploded. I mean, I got farmers out there, you know, combining their fields with data they marked with the drones. And so it's just endless, really. But anyways, this Lance program will get us back to normal, if you will. I can come in the morning, check it. 72 hours, you can make that, you know, they can make the request. And right now, what I'm doing with that, too, is I'm declining some because they're not really painting that picture of what their operation is. So my education piece of it is like, let me know. There's a reason why it's denied off the bat. You know, we got a safety of flight, arrivals, departures. But if you can actually explain to me in a very good description manner what you're doing, and it's not going to affect any safety of flight, I have no problem, you know, helping that operation out.
Is there an opportunity or something that you mentioned before the city website would direct you to your tower? Would it also be useful to have some kind of indication like, hey, these are these programs that you could do this, or here's the FAA guidance on this, or?
Yeah, we're going to actually do, so I think the end of July, it grabs all the hobbyists too.
23rd of July.
At some point, I won't confirm the information with you, and we'll do a press release, and we'll update the website on kind of what the new process and procedure is. I was kind of hesitant to do that in advance because it doesn't involve everybody yet.
Right.
So the commercial folks started 1 July, and this anticipation has come out. It was supposed to be launched last March, so most of the commercial folks have been looking for it. The hobbyists, or recreational flyers, it's probably going to go on quite a few months before we get our good.
Is a flight plan required?
A flight plan is not required. They have what's it's a CBO, and it stands for, escapes me. It's a it's basically a rules and regulations for a recreational flyers in certain areas to fly. You have to be a part of. You have to register your craft, and you have to be a part of these bylaws, if you will. And those bylaws, it's basically, you know, they're capped at 400 feet, and it's basically just being a good steward of flying, really. But I guess to answer your question is that they don't have to file a flight plan, but there is rules and regulations that they have to fly with. As a hobbyist, they have to fly under those rules and regulations of that area. But as a commercial flyer, there is Part 107, and that is regulated. So it's not a flight plan, but if they fly in this area for hire, they have to have what a certificate of authorization. It's kind of like a letter agreement, but it's different as far as every commercial flyer has to have a COA, certificate of authorization, to fly in the airspace. So if you're an operator of a commercial business and you want to fly in Hillsborough airspace or Salem's airspace, those are separate COAs. So they really do put them through the, you know, a lot of work to be able to fly, you know. But I think this Lance program, in the day, once they're registered, they're going to be able to just go in there and do everything electronically. The piece that I really have looked into the software programs, the difference of it, some people's software better than others. So then certain areas, like if I have a 0-degree grid here, they have to have a code to put into their drone, otherwise it won't fly. So that will get that authorization of that code. It's not a flight plan, but it's an authorization to fly once they get that code.
I was thinking of commercial, like Amazon over here off Gordon Road that wants to go all over the city, make deliveries.
That's probably going to be pre-approved letter agreements. You know, that's going to be an airspace that below 400 feet, 500 feet. But yeah, that's yet to come. But so right now, you know, we require a visual observing of the aircraft in the airspace. So those type of operations, you know, you're not going to have somebody visually observing that. So that's going to be a whole another different, you know, world, I guess, if you will. We're not quite there yet. So, but it's here.
Yeah, it's only 2019.
It's, yeah.
Have there been any reports of near hits?
I haven't had any in quite some time. So we used to get them, you know, at 1,200 feet, 2,000 feet, and that's kind of a scary proposition, right? And but now it's pretty common knowledge that you stay below 400 feet for the commercial folks or the recreation flyers. So you can get somebody out there seeing how high they can go, I'm sure. But it's also required, you know, for the pilots to identify. I mean, it could be happening, I don't know about it. So, but no, I'm not getting reports from the pilots. I haven't had a near miss of anything or sighting in probably 24 months.
You mentioned a code. Is that a transponder that must be installed?
It's not a code. It's an authorization they punch into their craft. Otherwise, it won't let you fly in that grid. So the maps are built. So I built ours probably 4 years ago, 3 years ago. And basically, it's a grid system on the map. And I basically just determined what I thought was a safe altitude. So, for example, you can't fly anything off the approach ends, you know, departure ends. It's at 0 degrees. There's no flying whatsoever. And it basically just kind of steps out. As we step out, it goes 50 feet, 100 feet, you know, 200 feet, up to 400 feet. But it's still capped at the 400 feet mark. So and that seems to make people, you know, happy what they're doing, you know, bush park or over the river and, you know, those type of things. So, but I've turned a lot of people down just by regulation of law, commercial flying. They don't have that authorization initially. So this Lance program is going to probably dumb it down for, in a lot of it's just, you know, straight up in DC they're busy. So your requests are coming in and they're not getting to them in a timely manner. This is one of those situations where the request will go in for 72 hours. If I don't get into it and I don't approve or deny it, it'll drop out and I'll have to resubmit. So it won't just keep stacking in there. It'll actually kick it back. You know, my idea is when I come in is I look at it every morning. But there's going to be times when I'm not around and some will get kicked back. So the ones I've initially approved here, what I'd like to see too is that they're not for tomorrow or early next week. They have some thought process to it. It's, you know, the 28th of July or something like that. And so they have time to complete their operation, but, you know.
Any other questions? Do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
May I address the tower chief?
Sure, Ron. Go ahead.
Thank you. And a note for the drones, by the way, that works pretty good because we happened to get a gentleman who came up and asked, why can't I fly my drone over here? It goes like this and stops in the air. We backed it up, went back and forth, and it wouldn't go forward.
Yeah.
And so it does work.
Yeah, and there's crafts you can buy. It's not built in the United States, and they don't have that technology in it. So that does, there's some loopholes around it, but in general, I guess what I'm waiting for is to see the remote control flyers over here and somebody question me why I can't.
The other item was the field burning that was burning yesterday, and I thought it was a concern, so I called Flight Service and I asked them if they had any NOTAMs for reduced visibility for the four fires that were burning over there, and they said that there were none. And I thought, well, that's an arrival into Salem. Is that something that can be done in the future, that those folks, when they're going to start burning, is that just something that happens during the day and a tower says, avoid that area?
I would say that in the past years, I've never had anybody not be able to fly around it, you know, or see it distance. It's never been right.
I've never had a problem flying around it.
So, I mean, it's, the fields are close, but I just haven't had any challenges with visual.
I was just curious on the NOTAMs on that.
Yeah, I mean, NOTAMs are pretty restricted, what you can and can't do them these days, but I'm just saying, I haven't had any feedback from pilots saying that's been a problem. And I haven't had a problem, you know, as far as visually, you know, seeing other aircraft coming and going, so it just hasn't been a challenge to me.
You had talked about the VFR and figures and the count for aircraft and that the figures had gone down. Do you, the FAA, take into account VFR days and IFR days, or IFR hours and VFR hours in calculating those numbers?
We break it down, the operations, down to VFR, IFR, transit, to air taxi, to air carrier, to general aviation, to overflights. It's all broke down monthly.
Are you trying to differentiate between VMC and IMC?
Well, what I was thinking was, if you have VFR days, you may have a higher count, but if you have IFR days,
yeah,
I should say IFR weather.
There's no doubt that does, but this time of year, so I'm saying this count is, we're not IFR very often, you know what I'm saying? So if I go historic and record back up, look at my traffic count, you can just visually put one year to the next, you can see it, there's a, you know, sometimes we can count for construction, we can count for, you know, with Aurora's reduced hours, I expected they actually have more operations, not less. So, if that makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Well, then we can move on to the airport manager report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the first time and probably going forward, I went ahead and included my report in the packet that you received electronically that station. I'm just sitting here reading to you for the next 15 minutes and give you an opportunity if there's any questions or anything. I don't have anything additional that's come up since this was emailed out, so rather than just bore everybody with recreational reading, if there's any questions about what I did submit, I'd be happy to respond to those. Is there any other questions? And at the very end, there is a mention in there of warbirds over the west, and since Jessica's here tonight, I don't know if she wants to be able to give any more information than what I gave, which is just that it's happening. That was it. So if there are any questions about warbirds over the west, she can probably better answer them than I can.
Well, does any of the commission members have questions for the airport manager?
Well, I have a question on the warbirds over the west. If Collins Foundation is going to be coming in here regularly like they've done for a long time at Aurora, like they did this year, is there any advantage to having the warbirds day on the same time that Collins is here?
So we were not involved with their scheduling,
right.
But my partner Brian and I are working towards kind of solidifying a more active relationship with them that would enable us to hopefully collaborate in the future. The issue with planning the weekend for Salem's airport to have, a fly-in of that caliber was really, we ran into a lot of issue with local events that were pulling thousands of people from the airport to other locations. The Great Oregon Steam Up was the first weekend in August. Hoopla, which draws thousands of people from the region, like hundreds of thousands of people. So a lot of it was, we picked a day that wasn't a local concern so that we could at least draw the greater Salem area, which is one of our major demographics that we're trying to draw. But in terms of collaboration, Brian and I are constantly working with other organizations to try and see how we can bring them in the future, or if even we can't align on the same date, how can we support them on their tour, etc. So I guess it's an ongoing conversation. That's something we, I don't have like a firm answer on that, but it's a hopeful future conversation that we're trying to slowly get towards. I hope that helps.
Yeah. Any other questions? I actually have three for you, and hopefully they're quick. So from our last meeting, we talked about the FEMA assessment that was going on, and apparently there was a report that was expected in May. Did we get that?
We have the FEMA assessment done. I don't have the DHS assessment. So okay. There were two actual assessments that were done back in November. The FEMA one we received, I think, in March, April this year. That one's completed.
Was it? Yeah, I didn't. When we talked about it last meeting, it didn't sound like it was just about to come out.
That might be so the Department of Homeland Security is doing a different type of assessment. That I'm waiting on that deliverable, but we do have the other deliverable already. So maybe I wasn't clear or confused the two.
Is there anything?
There are two assessments. One's done, one's not done yet.
Is there anything earth-shattering or notable in those?
No. The FEMA assessment was really more logistics. So when the circus comes to town after a natural disaster, where is everybody going to go? What operations are going to happen in this building? What aircraft are going to be parked on which ramp? So air medical staging would be in a different location than search and rescue, which is in a different location than cargo supplies and things like that. So that was the thrust of the FEMA assessment. The DHS assessment is a little bit more facility-based. What do we have here that can be used? Who owns it? And it goes outside the fence a little bit further too. Heavy equipment operators, mm-hmm. Places for heavy equipment to park. For instance, maybe a Garmin parking lot or the NORPAC parking lot. So it does a little bit more of infrastructure and suggested improvements, and that's the one that we're waiting for.
Okay. The other question I had was related to the air service development. I think in our last meeting, There was a meeting that was supposed to happen in Tucson with the airlines. I saw it mentioned on the Air Service website.
Yes, I think that might have happened just after our meeting, the week after we went to Tucson. And so I apologize for kind of missing the date on that. We did go. We met with five airlines, showed all of our data that was collected under the studies that the business community paid for. Met with Alaska Airlines, United, SkyWest, Southwest, and the fifth one escapes me. It's a small startup, quasi-startup airline that does mostly EAS flying around the country. Can't think of the name of it, but you wouldn't recognize it anyway. But there was some interest, obviously, from Alaska Airlines. They want to be the Pacific Northwest airline, but it's tricky for them because we're so close to Portland, which mm-hmm. is a major hub for them. And of course, we're wedged between Portland and Eugene, where they already fly. So they're not confident that they're not just taking their own passengers from other airports and flying them out of here. They also have a shortage of aircraft available. They're not really in a growth mode in terms of at-risk flying in new markets. They're establishing markets that don't already exist for them and putting larger aircraft in successful markets now so they can take advantage of those markets. SkyWest, who does flying for SkyWest, but also does flying for Delta Connection, United Express, and also Alaska, were interested primarily in the possible Salem to San Francisco route, which is one of the three that we would hope to get. And so we met with SkyWest separately than United, and both SkyWest and United showed an interest. So we're going to see if in the future if we can get a meeting with both of them at either the San Francisco hub, with the San Francisco hub manager, or possibly at headquarters in Chicago to talk about a possible Salem to San Francisco flight. So there was some positive feedback. It was really a litmus test to kind of feel out the airlines and see if there's any interest, no interest. What the threshold might be for a revenue guarantee. I think that if the SCASD grant, which I mentioned here, that's the federal grant, it does come through at some level, paired with the state grant, paired with the community pledges, if we're somewhere between $1.5 million and $2 million, that's going to get some attention. So I guess my feedback would be that it was positive, it was good, good to meet the folks. Our consultant actually has worked with these folks in the past, not just through Air Service Consulting, but actually worked with the gentleman from SkyWest, and so they have a business relationship too. And so it was interesting. He actually asked me when we sat at the table how close Salem was to sublimity, and I thought that was interesting. And so I explained where sublimity is and asked why, and apparently he bought a quad from a dealer over in sublimity. Uh-huh. And he lives in St. George, Utah. So I didn't get into the details because we were out 20 o'clock. That was 2 minutes of the conversation. So Long story short, or long story longer, there'll be future airline meetings. We don't know when yet. It'd probably be better to wait until after we know if we have more grant money to bring to the table before we have those next conversations. When you get to their hub manager or headquarter offices, you really want to have your package put together and really have a good story to tell, as opposed to here's what we want to do and what we're hoping for. Because those meetings are tough to get and they're pretty rare. And so we want to make sure that we have everything put together at that time. So we'll just have to wait and see. I think probably by the end of this year, I mentioned in my report here that we'll have an answer on the federal grant application, and that'll probably drive the next steps.
All right. And then the last question I had, Doug shared with me this article here this week from about, I guess, Newport Airport was fined by the DEQ for a bunch of violations. I didn't know if that was something, the gist of the article was basically that they were following the regulations, but apparently something changed and they weren't monitoring sufficient, I guess it was sufficient, well, the complete list of pollutants, and then they got fined, I don't know, $13,000 or something like that. I didn't know if that was something that we need to be concerned about here.
Well, it's always obviously regulatory compliance, local, state, and federal regulatory compliance is about 90% of my job. It's not breaking the law and not getting the city fined and not getting myself thrown in jail. We do have a DEQ permit with the state of Oregon for our stormwater. This is actually considered an industrial stormwater facility. We have a tremendous underground stormwater system that runs across this airport. We do have a permit. The city stormwater department manages that for us. We pay for that, of course. But we have a really good plan, and we have really good results. And to this date, we haven't been fined by DEQ for anything. So I like to think that we're in compliance.
Right.
But until we're told otherwise, and you know, I know Lance over at Newport, and he may not have known otherwise.
Well, that's what it sounded like. He was like, we thought we were doing everything we were supposed to be doing.
Sometimes that's just what happens.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you don't know. But knock on wood, we're safe. My knowledge as I sit here today on tape, we are in compliance with all local, state, and federal regulations.
Any other questions for the airport manager?
Has this air service development been presented to this committee for discussion?
Mm-hmm.
It was. So before we went to the city council to get authorization to apply for the grants on behalf of the community, the Airport Advisory Commission met, I believe it was last
July time.
And so we did that before the city council voted on that.
Yeah, we had a presentation. Yeah. And then
now, one of the things that we did do, so there were two grants. There was the state grant, and that was just a straight application, but that was by the Chamber of Commerce, so we weren't really involved in that one. It was a direct application from the chamber. But the federal grant requires the sponsor, in this case the City of Salem, be the applicant. So the city council said, gave us permission to apply for the grant, but if we are awarded a grant, we have to return to city council for authorization to accept the grant, because then they're going to want to know what the conditions are and if there's any grant match requirements. So it's really a two-step process if we do get a federal grant. So if we are awarded one, then this group will have to look at that and make that recommendation to the council on whether to accept it or not. So stand by from that. And obviously the timing will never work out to where it meets one of our quarterly meetings, so that would likely be a special meeting.
All right.
So this commission has approved this activity of searching for another airline to come in. I say another because it's been tried twice in the last.
This commission has recommended to the council to apply for grants to attract air service. That's really all the further it's gone. I guess then implicitly they're, you know, supporting air service.
So it has been discussed and approved.
Yes.
Yeah, we wrote that letter. That's what I was looking for, is that, and I can never find it. I know that I've got it here.
So I know it doesn't happen very often, and there's some new folks on the commission, but what happens in those cases is that this commission will meet and we'll vote, and then there's actually commission letterhead, and I'll typically draft a letter and the chairman will sign it, and that goes with my staff report to the city council, so that they know that the commission, the citizens advisory group, has reviewed and asked all the pertinent questions and those sorts of things. So you'll see that happen at some point down the week. Maybe with air service grant. And then at some point, you know, if we think future on, we do end up with airline service here, there's going to be a requirement to waive fees and some of the standard requirements that airlines have to come here. So that'll be another type of thing that this commission would vote on. Are we warm to waiving our fees for up to 2 years to support air service? And so those types of things are commission action items.
All right. Any further questions?
So that would mean that the city would be paying for any damage to the runway caused by these airlines crashing into the runway?
Well, no, that's a different thing. So the city pays for damage to its runway anyway, for everybody that uses the runway. If there's an aircraft crash, then the airline insurance company pays for any damage to our infrastructure beyond sort of normal wear and tear. So if they destroy any signs or lights or do any significant damage to the pavement, then it's an insurance company issue. The fee waiver would be for operational fees, like landing fees or terminal use fees. We typically, airline will require or request, we'll call it a requirement, that the airport participate. So the FAA doesn't allow us to use our money to subsidize air service, but the FAA will allow us to waive fees to help support a new startup airline for the first up to 2 years. So it's a fee waiver, essentially. If they came in and rented ticket counter space, they wouldn't pay a ticket counter space for the first 2 years. So it's not a lost revenue to us because we're already collecting nothing, but that's our give to help the airline establish themselves and grow to where they're self-sufficient. And so that's typically part of the package. That's really the only way that the airport can participate without violating any federal regulations, so we don't end up in the news.
May I ask if the association has had any discussion about this airline service?
You mean the commission has had?
Well, no, the local neighborhood associations who will be impacted by the additional aircraft coming and going.
I don't know that. I know the folks that know about it over here at Paradise and Lakeside Village, but there has been no discussion on it at any of the meetings on it, probably because it's a couple of years out.
Okay, thank you.
All right. If there are no more questions, we can move on to the next agenda item.
Go ahead.
Okay, the next agenda item is action items, and we do not have any action items on the agenda, so we can just move on to the next agenda item. Let's see, items for commission discussion. I'm looking at what my notes are here. I don't have anything. Brenda, did you have anything from the Salem Airport Users Group that you wanted to mention?
Not additionally, I think John
covered it all.
Covered it in that.
Perfect.
Report.
And I think, Neil, I think you may have a report for on the emergency preparedness activities.
The airport emergency preparedness plan, that's now been kind of gelled down into a checklist, at least that occupies the first part of the plan. And the idea of the checklist is that whatever airport operations personnel can get here after the shaking stops, we'll have to see about him catching a ride on a helicopter or something coming across the river. But the idea is that airport personnel, any of them, can walk over the bookshelf, pull it off, or reach down and pull up the checklist, and then be able to establish, there's established procedures to react to any emergencies. Those procedures would include things like inspection of the runway, taxiway, aprons, buildings critical to emergency operations. Then we'll need to establish communications with the City of Salem Emergency Management Office. We'll give them a status report of the airport conditions, a request for the city or the county or the state, whichever is applicable, for whatever services we need to make the airport up and running again, whether it be maintenance on a cracked one runway or whatever. We've also identified communication assets, how we're going to communicate with whom, whether it be satellite, telephones, or ham radio, or whatever. And so we've got that contact information really available so that we can be up and running as soon as they open up the binder. The plan is meant to be a living document, and it identifies within the plan for annual revision and editing. And it will just go on forever as far as improving it, updating it, revising, et cetera. So after we started in November of 2017, and at our next meeting, we should be able to really, cross my fingers, publish kind of the first real edition for the plan to go up on the bookshelf.
Is that plan a public, will that be a publicly available document?
No.
So that'll be... on somebody's bookshelf.
The reason it won't be public available is that within the plan, there are communication phone numbers and so on that aren't meant for the general public.
Okay.
We don't need to have John Q. Public calling the EOC saying that, you know, my dog is lost, ran off during the earthquake.
Well, it's good that you're doing this in advance.
Yeah,
that's what we thought. But part of the other, and when the DHS report that we mentioned earlier, when that comes out, we'll obviously take information there and we'll put that into our plan, or have it be an appendix to our plan. But part of what we want to get to is the recommendations or needs that we have going forward. So that when we go seek grant money, when there's funding for grant money, we have an actual document that's identified the gaps that we have here. So for instance, emergency generation for the airfield lighting, it's kind of an easy one to identify, but we'll have something actually documented as opposed to just trying to do a grant application on what we wish we have. And so, yeah, Neil's done a yeoman's job of working on this the past almost 2 years now, and we're quite a ways down the road. We thought, you know, at some point we better just start writing things down. And we'll organize it as we go along, and we'll learn some new things as we go along, but we had nothing to begin with. And a lot of airports still don't have any kind of we have an airport emergency plan that covers standard emergencies like aircraft crashes and hijacks and fuel farm fires and those sorts of things, but we don't have that major catastrophe plan. And we want this document to not just be about a Cascadia 9.0 event, but you can actually use it for less than, you know, if there are major wildfires in the area and those sorts of things that may impact the airport. But ideally, this plan will work, you know, kind of across the board for natural disasters.
Any other questions or items for the commission's discussion? If there are none, then we'll move on to the chair's report. And I don't have anything to report this time other than what we've already discussed. So if there's nothing else, we can adjourn this meeting. Can we get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? Second. Can everybody in favor of adjourning the meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next meeting in October will be your final meeting, as before your second 6 years is up. So,
wow.
You can turn off the recording.
Okay.
I was curious. I didn't.